us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with Our Wisconsin Revolution. And it is office hours again on this Thursday afternoon. We're joined by Professor John Shelton and the squad, Luke Mathers and Aaron Zommers. Gentlemen, it is always wonderful to be with you. How are you doing this afternoon?
Doing well, Will. Glad to be with you on the airwaves here across Civic Media.
I'm also doing well. You know, sometimes Luke says that I'm over here on the board hitting the ones and twos. I have to ask, though, when do I graduate to three?
You don't get it. It's just ones and twos. It's always just ones and twos.
Okay.
And I'm doing great. I mean, the weather's beautiful. Proud Boys are going to jail for long periods of time for trying to overthrow democracy. It's a good day.
Seditious conspiracy. 33 years is what I saw.
Yep.
I just saw the headline. So that is hot off the presses. And we're thrilled to be joined by you, Professor Shelton, here on Office Hours, here on Town Call. Will, what are we talking about today?
Well, class is in session in more ways than one, actually. Professor Shelton, does Green Bay start next Tuesday, or have you already started, or what's your schedule looking like in that regard?
No, we start next week after Labor Day. I've never officially checked on this, but I've heard it told that there's a state law that no public schools can start until after Labor Day.
But some of them already have, which is weird, because I thought that was the setup as well, but... Yeah. Will and I were on the air a couple of weeks back now. It was like the middle of August, and I was talking about how we don't need to be talking about back to school quite yet. It's around the corner. You as an educator, I'm sure it comes up much, much sooner in your daily life. But for Will and I, we don't have a whole excuse to jump to the back to school. We are out of school ourselves, and so I was like, why are we discussing this? And one of the excellent listeners texted in saying it was like the middle of August, and MPS had the select group of MPS students were already going back to school. And I was like, I did not know that, because I thought it was after Labor Day too.
I wonder if that was some kind of carve out for a magnet school or something like that. There may be some exceptions, but yeah, I mean, as far as I know, most public institutions are not starting until next week.
I would be very frustrated if it was, 2 weeks into August and my summer was over. Now I was getting sent back to school. I still wake up with night terror sweats sometimes, thinking that I'm late for school. Then I'm like, oh wait, I'm almost 30.
I still get those too, and sometimes I am late.
Yours are applicable,
He's got an excuse, Will. You might need to go talk to somebody about that, because that feels an unresolved issue that you should work on.
I got to see a professional to figure this one out.
Yeah, the microphone is not the therapy session that you may think it is sometimes, Will. But we're thrilled to be joined by the professor. And as he's noting, the weather is pretty nice. It's going to be a hot one, though, coming up on Monday, which is Labor Day. Which happens to be the subject of conversation that we're going to have with John. If you want to share in today's edition of Town Call, we want to hear your thoughts or questions for the professor, 844-967-2789. And there's a piece that's got probably the best lead that I've seen in some time now, Will. You found it, so I don't want to steal your thunder. But for the hot day that is going to be Labor Day forecasted across the state of Wisconsin, let's share the article that we'd love to discuss with the professor on this Thursday afternoon.
I appreciate that, Luke. I also appreciate Harold Meyerson over at the American Prospect for giving me this excellent one-off line. The piece titled, Biden's NLRB Brings Workers' Rights Back from the Dead. A decision last Friday makes union organizing possible again. Hot labor summer just became a scorcher.
That is a lead.
Last Friday.
That is a lead right there. I love it. Hot labor summer just became a scorcher.
Last Friday, the National Labor Relations Board released its most important ruling in many decades in a party-line decision in Cemex Construction Materials Pacific LLC. The board ruled that when a majority of a company's employees file union affiliation cards, the employer can either voluntarily recognize their union or, if not, ask the board to run a union recognition election. if, in the run-up to or during that election, the employer commits an unfair labor practice, such as illegally firing pro-union workers, which, of course, has become routine in nearly every election over the past 40 years, as the penalties are essentially negligible, the board will order the employer to recognize the union and enter forthwith into bargaining. Now, this decision was preceded by another one day earlier, in which the board also, along party lines, set out rules for representation elections, which required them to be held promptly after the board had been asked to conduct them, curtailing employers' ability to delay them, often indefinitely. This might be one of the single most impactful labor decisions of the last, I mean, God, I'm not the historian here, Professor Shelton, that's you, but it feels like decades. It feels like decades. And what we are seeing across the nation is a labor movement the likes of which my generation has never witnessed. But as a young person, and you have some data to back this up that I'm sure we'll get to a little bit later in the show, this is what the American workers want to see, and it's exciting. It's really exciting to finally see a labor movement like this come to the forefront of American policy.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks so much for that, Will. You know, and first of all, for everybody who's listening to this, happy Labor Day. That's coming up this weekend. And really think about why we're celebrating that. You know, Labor Day goes back to 1886. It's a holiday that's been around and since that time. And you know, during that time, you had really the most intense political conflict in the United States at that time was the labor question, right? Who was going to do the work for the nation in this industrial era, and what terms were they going to work, and workers were organizing. So, you know, but between beers and brats, you know, on Sunday or Monday, like, take a minute to acknowledge that. Let's get a couple things out of the way here. First of all, I mean, let me get some bad stuff out of the way first, okay, if I can. Biden has not been the most pro-labor president in, like, American history. Let's just, like, kind of start there. He has, especially through this National Labor Relations Board announcement and just the NLRB in general, like, there have been some things that have really exceeded my expectations. But I want to start off by tempering this a little bit. First of all, you know, the imposed deal on the rail workers last December was, I think, a huge catastrophic mistake by the administration. The failure to put enough political pressure on Democrats in the Senate to pass the PRO Act, the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, to me is a massive failure of the administration, because, you know, one of the things that was in the PRO Act that you mentioned, the NLRB decision, which is very, very important. And I agree with you. It's very important and creates new opportunities. You know, one of the things that's in there is card check representation, right? And that's very much connected to the first one of those NLRB decisions that you mentioned. What card check does is it allows all the workers at a work site to effectively get union representation by checking card, right? By basically kind of like signing a petition, right? But everybody's signing, you know, on separate lines, right? And it's not part of one document. And what that allows is it takes out all of the things that employers try to do to make it difficult for workers to win representation elections, right? And there's a whole industry created around this. Going back to the 1970s is really when it started. It's called the union avoidance industry. So corporations, when they have workers who try to organize and to exercise their right, it's not a privilege, it's a right that workers have to collective representation, right? When employers try to interfere in that process, there's a lot of different things they can do during the election process, right? They can hold captive audience meetings where they basically have all the workers in a work site have to, on company time, sit there and listen to whatever it is that the employer wants people to listen to, right? And it's a bunch of anti-union propaganda. They can intimidate workers who are leading the union drive, right? And they can fire them sometimes, right? We saw this with Amazon and we've seen this with Starbucks.
Amazon and Starbucks are the big two examples I wanted to note, yeah.
So going to a card check is really, really important because it takes away that power. What we really need is legislation that institutionalizes that, because the next NLRB can reverse this decision. But for now, this is a huge deal, because what this allows is let's go back to the Starbucks example, right? Let's say the workers, you know, sign cards, more than 50% of them sign cards. Starbucks says we're going to have an election. Well, if it's found that Starbucks fires somebody for leading a union drive, then the NLRB can say, hey, you engage in unfair labor practice. Now, guess what? Those workers are certified to bargain and you have to bargain with them. So that is absolutely huge, as well as the other thing you mentioned, speeding up the time for these elections so that employers can't just sit there and hold captive audience meeting after captive audience meeting and bring in anti-union consultants and use all of these bad faith arguments to try and prevent workers from exercising their right to collective self-determination at the workplace.
And this strikes me a lot as I got to give a shout out to my 90s babies because I found myself referencing this movie frequently. But you ever see A Bug's Life, Professor Shelton?
You know, I don't think I saw that one, actually. Should I?
All right, you'll have to go see that one then. Okay. So essentially the big baddie, which is the grasshoppers, they're significantly larger than the ants.
They eat
rule
all the
over
food.
The kingdom.
Yeah,
they eat all the food. Right, and the ants are starting to kind of organize, and the king villain grasshopper is talking to his second in command, and the second in command is like, you know, who cares? We're bigger than them. We're stronger than them. Like, let them do their thing. And he goes, he basically says, you know, if one steps up, then they all step up, and when they all step up, they outnumber us 10,000 to 1. What's going to happen? Our way of life will come crashing down. And then he breaks open the food container and kills a bunch of his, you know, grasshopper friends when all the food, you know, crushes them. And it's weird coming from Disney, of all places.
It's a cartoon, but yeah.
But it's a cartoon, and there's a lot of valuable insight that we can gather from those type of from a production of that quality, because that was true in the early 90s, that was true in the mid 2000s, in the mid 2010s, and it's true and even more relevant today.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, you know, I talk about this all the time at my own workplace. You know, you think about professors being people who are like somehow removed from, you know, what's like from real labor, politics. But, you know, we've had intense budget cuts against us, right? And everybody's having to do more with less. And what I keep telling people, and it's true, is our universities, no, but this is true for any workplace, doesn't function without the people who are doing the work. And we have all the power in the situation. So when we band together, we can demand the resources we need, we can demand the kind of workplace that we need, and the bosses can't really do anything to stop it, to your point.
Folks, you are listening to Town Call across Civic Media. We are joined for some Thursday office hours by Professor John Shelton, talking about labor with Labor Day weekend right around the corner. If you've got comments, questions, concerns you want to share and ask with the professor, we want to hear them here on Town Call. 844-967-2789. We're going to continue this conversation when we return.
You let one...
Welcome all. Welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text. 844-967-2789. The professor is in. It is Thursday office hours on the last Thursday, well, the last day in August. Boy, this summer has gone fast. Hot labor summer is in. It is a scorcher, and we are talking all things labor with Professor John Shelton. Professor, I want to provide a little bit of context to the conversation we were having before the break regarding the two landmark decisions by the NLRB. And one of the reasons, according to the piece that we were covering over at the American Prospect, that these two landmark decisions came down last week was the term of one of the three Biden appointees, Gwen Wilcox, is about to run out. Board terms normally last for 5 years, but Wilcox was reappointed for just 2 years to fill out the balance of a term from a member who retired early. Once she's off the board, there will be just three members, since one of the board's Republican seats has now been vacant for nearly a year. When it only has three members, the board is forbidden from making decisions that change its rules. Now, the normal procedure for filling seats on the board is that an appointee from one party comes before the Senate for confirmation in tandem with an appointee from the other party. However, hoping to thwart the now Biden-dominated board, the Republicans, backed by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, surprise, surprise, have declined to put forth a nominee to fill the vacant Republican seat. They've been wagering that the anti-worker duo of Senators Manchin and Sinema would deny the nominee the 51st vote required for confirmation. However, the White House renominated Wilcox for a five-year term, and Bernie Sanders' Senate Labor Committee has sent her nomination to the floor, with all the committee Democrats plus Alaska Republican Lisa Murkowski voting to do so. So it appears we were in a very unique procedural situation as well, where we were able to take advantage of hot labor summer right now. Timing couldn't be better, as we've been discussing. The labor movement across the country has been blowing up, and we're seeing official government entities supporting this, as well as a piece over from Market Watch noted, unions are key to reversing stagnant wages and economic inequality, Treasury Department says in first of its kind report. These findings challenge arguments that unions hold back growth, according to Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. The decline of U.S. worker power since the 1970s has led to economic inequality and stagnant wages, and supporting labor unions may be the key to reversing that trend, according to the Biden administration.
Yeah, well, that's I'm so glad you mentioned all that, because that's huge. And, you know, like, I've had my criticisms of Biden and his labor politics, the administration, you know, but again, I think on the whole, it's exceeded my expectations. And, you know, I also want to tell people, like, there's absolutely no way I'm not voting for Biden right next year. I mean, especially given, which I know the work you did looking at the people who are running for the Republican Party in that debate last week, there's just no, right. There's no way. And we'll continue to push. But you know, that first of all, the NLRB stuff, I mean, the folks appointed, as well as the general counsel, Jennifer Abruzzo, who has really pushed hard for workers' rights. She comes out of being general counsel for a union. And so she's done a lot of things to try and protect workers as they've sought to, exercise their right to organize. But that Treasury, the Treasury Department report was really, really important. And I think the concept or the context of that report is really important too, because, you know, when people think about the different departments, you think about departments like, I don't know, education and labor as being ones that are often headed by people that are seen as more advocates for working people and for, you know, different services that folks need, more liberal, right? To kind of, put a simple phrase on it. Treasury has traditionally been the department, especially under recent Democrats, that's been more conservative. That's been, you know, to use an academic term, neoliberal, right? Pushing for the interests of business above everything else. I mean, remember Tim Geithner under the Obama administration, who basically like bent over backwards to try and help out bankers when they had ruined our economy. So this is huge that you have a department under Janet Yellen saying that no, labor unions are actually good for growth. They're good for economic equality. They're good for economic security. These are things that folks, for those of us who have been studying this and who have been members of unions and union activists for years, we know this, right? And we know that not only are they good for growth, they're good for worker retention. They're good, for the principle of democracy, like making civic society stronger and teaching people about citizenship. So there's scores and scores of benefits of labor unions. And it's good to see the Treasury Department actually acknowledging this and you know, kind of drawing a line in the sand there. Like, no, we not only are we going to tolerate unions, we want workers.
We support unions. Yeah.
And that is what makes, we were talking about this at the break, FDR the most pro-labor president ever, because, you know, workers understood under FDR that he wanted them to organize unions, that it was for the good of the country for them to organize in unions. And that's the message that we need to get from this administration.
So that there's good work being done, but there's even more that can be done. And let's say there's still time left in this term, and the president is seeking a second term in 2024. So maybe he's working his way up in the standings. But I was curious to know when you said he was not the most pro-labor president in our nation's history, what your top five was. So it's good to know FDR at the top. But is there an ability that you believe, Professor Shelton, that Biden can maybe continue to climb the ranks in those rankings between now and the end of this first term, or possibly the end of a second term?
I think he could. I mean, I'll give a shout out to my good friend, and I think your good friend too, Will Harvey Kay, who points out that, you know, what makes a president great is, you know, his or her connection to what it is that Americans want, right? And so, you know, when I think about the most pro-labor presidents in American history, it's FDR, and it's, there's, you know, there's not really a close second. But I think you have to put Lincoln in there. I mean, fighting a war and pushing the American people to end the institution, the horrific institution of slavery, hard to imagine, you know, something that is a more important development than that. And that's a pro-labor development. You look at presidents like Harry Truman, who vetoed the Taft-Hartley Act. Unfortunately, it was overridden, but that's a law that took away rights from workers in 1947. And Truman pushed for national health care, like really pushed for national health care and a guaranteed job for all Americans. So I have to put those three ahead of Biden for sure. But I think, you know, one of the things that is going to help us, as was the case with all three of those people, is if we as working people push Democrats and push the president to be more pro-labor and to ensure that we have the kind of governmental infrastructure in place to get the kind of power that we need, right? I mean, Lincoln didn't just out of the blue start opposing slavery. He did it because there were abolitionists. There were African Americans who were streaming into the Union military in order to smash the institution of slavery. Douglas was telling black men, join the army now and let's crush slavery, and pushing Lincoln to do that. Workers were organizing like crazy in the 1930s and pushing FDR, to work with Congress to pass the what eventually was called labor's Magna Carta, the Wagner Act in 1935. So I think it's kind of a push and pull, right? It's not that Biden is going to do any of this kind of on his own initiative necessarily, but if we keep pushing, we can make him, I don't think he's ever going to be FDR, but we can get him closer to that, which I think is what we should be striving for.
And in that vein, both you and Will were referencing ahead of the show this morning, talking about the polling where there is growing support among young individuals in particular as well when it comes to support for unions and for a union and workers' ability to strike. Can you tell us a little bit more about those findings and what kind of growing sentiment we see here in America to support and demand from elected officials to take stances on issues and be pro-labor?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Luke, because this is super, super important. As we think about Labor Day, 71% of Americans, 71%, this is polling that was just done, that's being released for Labor Day by the AFL-CIO, approve of labor unions, while only 19% disapprove. 91% of Democrats and half of Republicans, 52% of Republicans in this country support labor unions. 75% of Americans support workers going on strike, including 58% of Republicans. So no matter where people are across the political spectrum, they understand how much power their bosses have and they want to organize to do something about it. That is huge. And when you look at young people, right, this was the very premise of your question here. This, I was stunned when I saw this. Not that I was surprised that young people would support unions, because they're facing some of the most insecure, unequal labor conditions that anyone maybe historically in this country has faced, or at least on
you're telling us, John.
And I know. I hear from my students all the time, man. 88% of people under the age of 30 support labor unions, and 90% of people under the age of 30 approve of strikes, support strikes. So, I mean, you know, the days of the Jeff Bezoses of the world running roughshod over all of us and you know, making our long-term outlook insecure and having people live with all this anxiety all day about what their future is going to look like, that's coming to an end, right? Because
God,
because
I hope you look, so.
It is. It is. And it's, and we just have to make that happen. We just have to make it happen.
And John, it's interesting. Those numbers, they are staggering. And you pointed out across demographics how much individuals, Republican, Democrat alike, support unionization and the efforts of the striking workers. Those numbers are higher than cannabis legalization, both from a Republican perspective, a Democrat perspective. And that's kind of considered, I don't want to say the no-brainer, but almost the no-brainer popular support issue nationwide that the vast majority of Americans all agree on. Those numbers are even higher than that. I also have polling data from Gallup from August 1st through the 23rd, specifically related to the auto workers and the television and film writers strike. 75% of Americans side with workers, while 19% side with the employer. 6%, of course, then replying indifferent or
don't know enough either. Information.
Yeah.
Yep.
Turns out organizing a union is a better high than smoking pot, isn't it?
Who would have thought? Is that the new DARE line, right? We're gonna go bring that into our schools. Like, hey, organize a union. Stay away from drugs. Say no to drugs. Say yes to unions. But television and film writers also were supported by 72%, and television and film actors supported at 67%. This is widely recognized as a necessity by the American public.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, because every single person in this country, unless you are literally like one of the top richest 100 people or something, I'm sure y'all feel this. I'm sure everybody listening to this, you feel insecure about your future. You don't know that you're going to have a job and healthcare and housing and all the things that every single person in this country deserves. And whose fault is it? It's not, the economy is not the weather, right? The economy is constructed by people. It's constructed by people. It's constructed by us. But when people have more power, the wealthy, the millionaires, and especially the billionaires, right, they construct it in a way that benefits them. And that's why we have things this way. And what people are really waking up to in this country is that, you know, a union is not this like scary thing. It's our avenue for taking back our power and our agency from these people who have taken so much from us.
We're talking and hot labor summer. Oh, go ahead, Will.
No, you go ahead, Luke. You go ahead.
We're talking hot labor summer with Professor John Shelton for our Thursday edition of Office Hours with the Professor. If you've got a question, you can call or text. We're going to get to some texts on the other side, but we are going to continue this conversation discussing historic decisions out of the National Labor Relations Board and all of the positive polling and updates that we have in labor while still knowing that there is room for improvement. You're listening to Town Call across Civic Media. Download the Civic Media app. Take us with you wherever you go this Labor Day weekend. We're going to finish the conversation with the professor on the other side, but give us a call. Send us a text, 844-967-2789.
There's power.
Welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. It is Office Hours with Professor John Shelton, and it is hot labor summer. Hopefully, it's the hottest labor summer of your life so far as we continue on the labor movement throughout the United States. Professor Shelton, I wanted to touch on one last point from the Market Watch article that the related, of course, to the Treasury Department and their first of its kind report regarding unionization and its benefits to the middle class. The report noted that unions benefit the middle class in that they raise members' wages by 10 to 15%, which also said that unions help to improve wages and benefits of non-union workers, affecting the well-being of many families and communities. All of that chips away at inequality, including racial and gender wage gaps. So this, you know, unions are not just for the members of the union. It increases the quality of life for all American workers across the board. And it's specifically assists certain demographics that have kind of been left behind in the past. Janet Yellen specifically noting that black men have the highest union membership of any demographic rate, 13% to 10% overall. They've been hit particularly hard by the trends experienced as by the middle class as a whole, and may be particularly poised to benefit from unionization. As we've discussed, this is the first of its kind report from the Treasury Department, who also noted through Kamala Harris's appearance that trickle-down economics benefited American corporations and the wealthiest, but not really the workers. As the report pointed out, 18 out of the 21 types of occupations that are generally members of potential unionization efforts see weekly wages higher than those of non-union members, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The only three that aren't are management, business and financial, and computer mathematics. So unionizations across the board increasing quality of life for all American workers, according to the neoliberal Treasury Department, not just us here at Town Call.
Yeah, and here's the crazy thing, and I've said this too. Actually, I've been quoted in a number of like business publications talking about this related to like worker retention, right? And the so-called workforce shortage we have in this country, which is not real. It's a shortage of people who want to work in those particular jobs. But when workers have unions and they get higher wages and they have more long-term connection to their jobs, that's actually really good for worker retention. It's actually good for businesses to have that. And if more of them would just realize that, they would allow their workers and encourage their workers to organize. German companies like Volkswagen get that, by the way. So that's number one. Number two, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, because this week is the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington, which was this massive civil rights movement you noted in the report about the connection between labor rights and racial equality. The March on Washington in 1963 was organized primarily by labor activist A. Philip Randolph, who is one of the most important Americans actually in the 20th century, who organized the March on Washington, which was called the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. It was always about economic equality for African Americans. And as A. Philip Randolph said, we don't hear what he said that day as much as we hear what King said. He said, "What good does it do me to sit at a lunch counter if I can't afford to buy a hamburger there?" So unions, many African Americans and civil rights activists have understood that the labor movement was one of the best avenues for them to be able to improve racial equality in this country.
And it's not just wages, Professor. Unions have helped improve safety dramatically. As a direct example, after the passage of the Union-backed Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970, the rate of non-fatal work-related injuries and illnesses from 1972 to 2018 fell fourfold, from 11 cases per 100 full-time workers to 3 cases per 100 full-time workers, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. This is helping keep workers safe. It's helping improve their quality of life across the board. It is necessary.
Yeah, and do you know who signed OSHA into law in the early 1970s? It was Nixon, right? Mm-hmm. At a time when, you know, occasionally Republicans even understood the importance of working with labor unions.
There we go. We are having office hours with Professor Shelton. If you want to ask the professor a question, give us a call. Send us a text, 844-967-2789. We got Brian in Suamico texting in, listening on WGBW. Saying, "Hi, Professor, can you comment on anything that Tony Evers could do to help get rid of the anti-union teacher-hating laws of Act 10 that Walker, said something else, and his minions passed in 2011? Please also remind people what it did to Wisconsin teachers and our profession. There are now massive teacher shortages in school districts," and Brian notes he is a union member and a teacher from a suburban Green Bay district.
And that his daughter is attending UWGB in the fall.
Oh, cool. Well, Brian, have her take one of my classes. You know, thanks for texting and thanks for listening. There's a lot of things to unpack there. So first of all, let's talk about Act 10 and what it did. It effectively took away collective bargaining rights from public employees, including teachers. And, you know, what that means in terms of salaries should be obvious, right? Teachers can't really bargain for higher salaries. But even more than that, it's taken away the professional discretion of a lot of teachers, right? Because now administration can just basically come up with the handbook and say, this is what you're going to do. And teachers don't have any say necessarily in like what their professional development's going to look like. So it's huge. And it's led to, it's played a direct result in terms of leading to teacher shortages in this state. Teacher turnover is much higher than it was 10 or 15 years ago. And many districts, especially rural districts, these constituencies of Republicans struggle to keep teachers, right? So what can Evers do? He has, in both of his last few budgets, actually proposed to restore collective bargaining rights for public employees. I'm hopeful that there'll be a court challenge, actually, that might revisit this now that we have a different composition of the state Supreme Court. But long term, what we need is to do as the states around us have done, like Michigan and Illinois, and institutionalize public employees' rights to collectively bargain. And our unions are going to be pushing for that. And we're going to get that at some point soon. It's going to happen. So be optimistic, because we are going to dramatically improve our education system by restoring collective bargaining rights in the state within the next 10 years.
There we go. We thank you so much, Professor John Shelton, for joining us here on Town Call for this Thursday edition of Office Hours. If you missed any portion of the show, or you want to commemorate Labor Day over the long holiday weekend, share this episode of Town Call with your family and friends. You can listen to the podcast wherever you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or you can head over to the Civic Media app, civicmedia.us. You can click on the shows, click on Town Call, and all of our podcasts are there as well. We appreciate Brian texting in and all of our excellent listeners. And we really appreciate you, Professor, joining us on this Thursday afternoon.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Enjoy
the Labor Day.
Yeah, happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day, everybody.
Town Call.
Take it easy, party people.
We'll be back tomorrow for the most Wisconsin headlines of the week, 12:15. Talk to y'all then.
This is the worst day of my life.
The worst day of your life so far.